Blog Talk Radio.
To Watford, three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game. Christian Watford with a three.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
This is Indiana. Yeah, we do it big. Boston on the big ten. You know what it is.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of the Assembly Call. I am your host, Jared Morris. I will be joined in just a moment by Andy Bottoms. We are not quite sure yet if Ryan Phillips is going to be able to join us. It's a little bit up in the air. He had some travel issues tonight. Certainly, if he does join us, he will have a rant prepared specifically for that. Unfortunately, this is not a victorious, this is not a happy episode of the Assembly Call that we are bringing you tonight because we are reacting to last night's loss. To Syracuse. We were unable to have a live show. We apologize for that, but some scheduling conflicts just got in the way. But in hindsight, maybe it's a good thing that we've had 24 hours to kind of sit on this game, digest it a little bit, think about it, and hopefully we'll have some more measured reactions than perhaps the emotional reactions that we would have had last night. As, of course, you know, Indiana last night had a rematch against their Sweet 16 foe from last year, Syracuse, and the Hoosiers lost 69-52. It was not a good game. It was a game that the first half, Indiana did some good things, and they were only down by four at the half. They actually led at one point, and I think for a lot of us that were expecting a repeat of last year's game, the way the team played in that first half, some of the shots they made there late in the first half to get that game tied and go ahead, really caused some optimism, I think. But unfortunately, in the second half, the Hoosiers were outscored by 13. It really wasn't even that close. Syracuse really just, they came out and, Indiana to start the second half do a lot of the same things they had done offensively in the first half. Didn't have the same energy on defense, and it got badly really quickly. And so, we usually start out every show with a banner moment, with our bottoms line with Ryan's rant. You know, my banner moment really is I guess how the team played in the first half. If we kind of look to try and find some positive from last night's game, you know, getting down 10-0, I think I, along with all of Hoosier Nation, probably thought, oh my goodness, this could get real bad real quick. And so I was very heartened to see the team come back from that 10-0 deficit and play well and really play with a lot of energy on defense, a lot of energy on the boards. The shots weren't falling. The offense didn't look great. But you know what? The team did enough to get back into that game. It was 30-29. Syracuse made that three there late. That pushed them up to the four-point lead at halftime. But, you know, I really thought that stretch there in the first half when we battled back and took the lead, we played some really good basketball right there. And so, to me, that's the positive that you take is you see what this team is capable of, you know, in a rough environment when things aren't going right at the beginning of the game, and they really showed some fortitude. And then I don't know what to say about those the next 20 minutes. And so we're going to get into that because that is obviously very concerning. But if we are looking to take a positive from last night's game, I think you have to look at that stretch in the first half where the team played some good basketball. With that said, we will cover everything tonight. So buckle your seatbelt, strap it down, and we will get to it. But before we get into any more of that stuff, let's go over to Andy Bottoms and get his summation, his bottoms line on last night's IU. Andy, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's funny that you talk about being able to take some time. I think in some regards, I was glad to be able to maybe measure my reaction a little bit. In other regards, I think I looked more into some things that I thought I saw last night and allowed myself to get more worked up about a game that I didn't expect IU to win than I really probably thought I would or should. So definitely no shortage of things to talk about. I mean, I guess for me in general, and we'll get into a lot of the points about some of the lineups and you know, how the second half was handled from both a player and a coaching standpoint. But I think, you know, to roll that up for me, it feels like this is kind of a crossroads almost for the team in terms of a number of things, really. You know, some of the post-game comments from Crean, the way the second half really played out, the way that, you know, he's kind of dealing with the youth and the guys that he has on the roster. I'm really interested to figure out what, if anything, changes in the next, you know, the course of these next few games, which I think are going to be, winnable. The Notre Dame game is really the only one to really, you know, circle of the remaining non-conference games to maybe use as any kind of measuring stick, which it sounds like Crean wanted to use last night's game for. But I'm very intrigued to see how the team responds, how he responds, and everything, because at this point in the season, you really look down the ledger. There aren't, you know, marquee wins to hang your hat on. There aren't necessarily bad losses, but there's a lot of work to do for this team. And as young as they are, there's a lot of different directions that this thing could go based on how everybody involved reacts to the way that the game played out last night.
Okay, so Andy, and you bring up some good points. You know, we usually, you know, as we get into these shows, we talk a lot about individual player performances. I think really tonight the natural place to start is with Coach Crean. And with his comments after the game, which you kind of alluded to, and some of the decisions that he made, you know, I think as I've, you know, looked at comment sections on at Inside the Hall and forums at Pegues and other places where IU fans congregate and talk, you know, Tom Crean has been the big topic of discussion. And so I want to get your thoughts on some of that. I know you tweeted some things out earlier today, you know, that maybe concerned you a little bit about what kind of seemed like, what's the right word, hypocritical isn't the right word, but, you know, kind of some decision-making by Crean that didn't necessarily make sense, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're not going to call timeouts, if you're going to let guys play through it, you know, play through some of the issues that they're having, don't you need to leave teams on the floor longer? You know, and with all the substituting, you know, it seemed like there was a different team on the floor every couple minutes, and they weren't really able to do that. So, you know, and you look at some of Crean's comments, and he's always been a guy who he sticks up for his players. He is typically very positive in post-game comments, and he absolutely was not, you know, quoted as saying he was disgusted with the lack of leadership last night. And I'm reading off a story at InsideTheHall.com. You know, even I can't quote it, but, you know, not necessarily called out Will Sheehy, but said, you know, you got a guy like Will Sheehy who's in a different role, didn't necessarily seem comfortable. And so it was really kind of something new that we haven't really seen him do. So let's kind of take a look at this from a macro level a little bit. I mean, what did you think of the comments? And then get into some of the things that you talked about on Twitter today and some of the numbers that you ran, because I think it's very interesting in terms of what you found.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the easiest way to summarize my thoughts on the comments are I hope he knows the team better than any of us, and he knows that they're going to respond to that, because quite honestly, the number of guys they have on this team who have really been through some of these types of games and situations before is pretty limited, and kind of come at him in that way either says that he has the pulse of the team, that that's something they're going to respond to. I guess I'm not really sure what else I might say. I guess I just hope that that's right, because it'd be really easy for a team of young guys like this to kind of go into a shell at this point and really start to be, you know, negatively impacted by that. I just thought, you know, a team like last year where you've got a lot of veteran guys, and just a completely different makeup, I feel like is more suited to, you know, take that kind of criticism and really respond to it. I certainly hope this team is one that can do that, but, you know, we've got some guys we've even said so far, a Hollowell, you know, how does he respond to some of those situations? I think Sheehy's interesting, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later, but I mean, I think there's, you know, we got to start to wonder whether this is the role that he's really suited for, what he's being asked to do on the team. I was definitely caught off guard by it. I think other people were too. I know Justin Albers even tweeted something about, you know, the comment about people not thinking they could win the game. I just find that really tough to listen to, given how they played in the first half of and how they had really hung around when they got down early. I just thought that was an odd comment to make. And, yeah, definitely I will be interested to see how the team reacts, but I was really caught off guard by it. In terms of some of the other things that I had looked at and kind of tweeted out, you know, last night I looked a little bit less about substitutions and just about, you know, how the game played out from the point when it got tied at 33 early in the second half until things got out of hand. And basically over a, you know, you can look at different stretches, the numbers are pretty bad regardless. I think when I first looked, it was about a 9.5-minute stretch. The team had 8 turnovers. They got outscored 23-3. They only attempted 2 field goals. Now, that doesn't count free throws they took during that time. I think they were, you know, 3 out of 4, 3 out of 5 in that time at the line. And at no point Crean take a timeout to try to stem the tide, which is something that he did do in the first half, and I thought actually was effective. You know, I know one of the criticisms of him is, you know, hanging on to some of these timeouts and all those kinds of things. And I guess I'm more of the opinion that particularly with a young team, you've got to stop some of these things before it gets out of hand, because it got out of hand. And at some point, I think there's teaching moments to be had there. And quite honestly, even if that means if you're not happy with effort or leadership or whatever the comments were coming out of the locker room, then I feel like you already have that feel for what the team's going to look like. At the first sign of trouble, wouldn't you pull people aside? Wouldn't you, I mean, hell, yank all 5 guys off the floor and put in somebody else and really lay into them? But for me, to sit back and kind of, I'm not going to say do nothing. It's not like he wasn't coaching during media timeouts or coaching on the sidelines, but to really not take any action there in terms of, you know, settling people down, you know, just swapping out the lineup, you know, if anything, try something at that stage, because by the time, you know, the media timeouts rolled around, it seemed like it was too late. And you know, Ryan and I went back and forth on Twitter about this a little bit last night, and he was like, you know, try to let him fight through it and, you know, coach it after the fact. I don't know that with these guys you can do that. They just haven't played together enough, haven't been through these situations. You know, to me, last year's team, you know, this is an unfair comparison in a lot of ways. I think we're kind of doing it a lot over the course of the year. But those guys had been through a lot of tough games, and they had experiences together to fall back on that this team doesn't have. And so at that point, if you're not seeing the leadership that you want on the floor, that's kind of your job as the coach to try to provide that or spark that or whatever. You know, I thought that was a case where it just didn't make any sense not to take a timeout there. Because quite honestly, end of the game with 4 timeouts left, I don't know what the hell good those did you when you're already down that many points. So taking those on the plane with you doesn't really do a whole lot. And certainly the team showed for a long stretch they didn't have the ability to work through it on their own. And that kind of speaks to some of the things I tweeted out today about the lineups. And I'll try to go through a little bit of that quickly. But I tried to look through basically from the start of the second half through about the 3:25 mark is the point that I stopped charting what happened. And so, you know, the starters played the first 3:51 together at the 16:09 mark, made a couple subs. And between that point and the 3:25 mark, there were 10 separate lineups. One of them played together twice for 2 brief stretches. But, you know, 10 unique combinations of players out there over that stretch of what ended up being 12 minutes and 44 seconds. And the longest that any of them played together was 2 minutes and 13 seconds. 6 of those lineups were used, five of them were used for less than a minute. And I think 7 of them were used for a minute 17 or less. And so on the one hand, I'd be willing to entertain the idea of let's let these guys work through it if you're really going to let them work through it. But again, if I'm turning around every other possession and I'm not on the floor with the same guys, there's just not that level of continuity to be able to work through it. So on the one hand, you can't, you know, that was kind of my point. I know you used, you know, hypocritical as a term. I guess that's probably what I would have used as well, was on the one hand, you can't kind of take a play-through-it approach, the lineup, and not really letting a group of guys develop any cohesiveness because the game wasn't being played at a fast pace, particularly in the second half. So if I'm playing in a minute stretch, I'm in there for maybe two offensive possessions tops, two defensive possessions tops. I don't know what you are able to really do as you switch guys in and out, as guys are trying to figure out matchups and who they're guarding. You know, threw that 1-3-1 out there and immediately gave up a wide open three. I didn't understand that, and it kind of flies in the face of, I'm not going to take time out, I'm going to let you work through it, but I'm not really going to let you work through it because I'm going to, you know, kind of mess with the lineup consistently. And I think, I'm not sure what message that sends. I think you can, you know, delve a little bit more into, you know, how much some of these guys played. I used the Williams and Hollowell as an example. You know, Williams in that 12-minute, 44-second stretch, he played 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And Hollowell sat for just a minute 35. And to me, the way those guys were playing wasn't different enough to warrant that kind of disparity in minutes. And I'd rather play a guy like Troy Williams 30 minutes a game and let him figure things out while he's out there, because if he's making mistakes, they're mistakes of effort or trying too hard, or maybe you got to rein him in a little bit, some of the same things that you needed to do with Oladipo from time to time. But I'd much rather have that, where in the first half he went out and made, you know, not just the highlight reel put back dunk, but, you know, outside of his ill-advised three-pointers, which were all three of them, I thought he played well and played with effort and did some things defensively, and he's going to make mistakes, but I'm all for the play through it if you let a guy like that with that much. I didn't understand a lot of it, and I think it's hard to reconcile all these different things that are being said with what happened on the floor, and really trying to figure out where they go from here, because we talked about last time, you can't continue to play 11, 12 guys in the way that they have when you get into these big games, and at no point do we really sell into any kind of rotation. So I'll take a breath after that diatribe, and you can determine where we go from there on that topic.
Wow. That was some great analysis, Andy. I think that you've thought about this a little bit today.
Sadly, more than I probably should have.
Okay, so there is a lot to cover there, and there's still something about last night's game that doesn't make sense to me, and I want to address that in a second. I do want to alert all of our listeners, if you go to Assembly Call, you will see a new design. We all like it, tried to simplify it a little bit and, you know, pay homage to an Indiana legend that has been probably the most beloved player on the show. You'll see Assembly Call. And also, you see a button down there for subscribe. That's our email list. And we will take good care of email address. We'll never sell it to anybody, and we're only going to email you when we have good stuff to say. But we got some good stuff in the works, a Where Are They Now series, some different interview series that we're going to start doing. And some of that stuff is going to be subscriber-only content. So that will also give us the ability to alert you and let you know of special scheduling changes, things like that. So definitely subscribe to we'd love to have you on there, and we appreciate all of and look forward to continue building this community. To get back to what you said, Andy, and I do want to go to some Twitter questions, because we have had some Twitter questions submitted, and I want to get to those, and they deal with Will Sheehy. They deal with Coach Crean a little bit. But here's the thing, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because I'm having a really hard time reconciling what I saw in the first half with what I saw in the second half and then the comments after the game. Because the team that I saw in the first 20 minutes did not look like a team that didn't believe that they could. They didn't believe they could win that game. And to me, you know, after what happened in the Sweet 16 last year, and them hearing about how we can't beat the zone and we can't face Syracuse, and you get down 10-0, you got a young team. I mean, there is an avalanche of things that happened within the first 3 or 4 minutes of that game that should have caused this team to fold and lose by 50 points, like we did up in Minnesota in '94. You know what I mean? Or whatever year that was when Coach Knight was there. I mean, that game should have just snowballed. But yet, in the first half, the team really fought. And, you know, like, I don't know, after watching the second half and reading everything today, I'm looking back on it, and it almost seems like it didn't happen, but it did. I mean, the team was banging on the board. They played really good defense. You know, like you said, I thought Troy Williams did a lot of good things. I thought in the first half, Will Sheehy really played some good defense on C.J. Fair. I thought the team was really hitting the boards. You know, Yogi, you know, made some threes. Like, there was – we got down. It's like the team showed some fortitude. They showed some mettle. They looked like a team that believed they could win there for about that 12, 13-minute stretch, whatever it is. And then it's like a completely different team came out in the second half. And I agree. That team looked like it didn't believe that it could win, and it started jacking up threes out of desperation in the, you know, in the first four possessions of the second half, which didn't make any sense. But it's like something changed, something switched, and I don't get it. I'm having a hard time reconciling the differences between the first half and the second half, and then the comments, because for a while this did look like a team that believed it could win. So I don't understand, after you play that well, you get down, you're only down by four, when you're down, these guys know it could have been worse. How do you then come out in the second half with such a different mindset? And I agree, the team looked like it didn't believe it could win in that second half, but what changed? Do we chalk that up just to this being a young team that, you know, is going to be kind of emotionally unstable and that the leadership wasn't quite there in the second half? Is there something else? I mean, because we didn't – I mean, you'll agree with me, right? There was a stretch there in the first half where the team played well. Where did that go?
Yeah, it's funny because even, you know, when you think about the comments from halftime, you would have thought – and then you watch, you know, they came out in the first couple of minutes, and even though they didn't take their shots, still managed to tie the game. I mean, they scored the first 4 points of the half and got right back in it. So even if you even want to feel like if that's what it, you know, you came out with that mindset of, oh, I don't know that we can do this, and you score the first 4 points and you tie the game up, I don't know what at that point would make you feel that way. I mean, obviously trying to get into the head of a 18, 19, 20-year-old kid is probably more than I'm capable of at this point, but I just don't – yeah, it just didn't make sense. And I think it's one where – and this is where I think the timeouts become important. I think it's easy for a young team for things just to snowball. And you kind of look at I was looking through different possessions, and I'll try to find it in where I have this. The one good thing is I actually did, like, prepare notes, which I usually just am, you know, talking off the top of my head. But at that point, you know, so the game's tied. Syracuse scored the next four possessions that they had. So they scored 10 points the next four possessions. And I think it almost turned into, I think at that point it really started to get away from it. And that's where I say, you know, some of these timeouts, you've just got to, you know, break that rhythm or stop that, you know, here we go again type attitude or letting things like that snowball, because it really did. And then there was another stretch where, you know, kind of got a little bit of stability in there on the defensive end and forced a couple turnovers in the next few possessions. I think they only scored on, you know, one or two of the next five possessions, and then they scored on five straight again. And I think it's just, you know, momentum is such a big thing for this, and they see a few shots go through the basket for Syracuse, and I think they, you know, did start to try to do too much. Vonley took a three at the 1 point there, which was just the, you know, not at all the time for that, and you know, all the turnovers right there were just one right after the other, and it just felt like from a just a, you know, kind of a fragile mindset. And I think that's what you're going to get with a young team. And I think that's where you kind of look to, you know, the coach or whomever to really stem that tide. And it's obviously ideal to have, you know, the kind of leadership that you want on the floor. But if you're not seeing that, to me, that falls back on the coach to figure out how to provide that when nobody else is. And I'm not, you know, I don't think anybody's going to go out and tell you that Cheehy had a great game and that he really, you know, took charge of things. I'm not sure he's that guy. For as emotional as he can be and everything else, I don't know that he's the – because he's not a, you know, give me the ball in crunch time kind of guy, or you need a bucket, I'm going to go get it for you kind of guy, I just don't think that's the kind of player he is. And so are you trying to fit the square peg in the round hole at that point? I think Yogi could be that guy. But he also was one that after the game said had guys didn't feel like they could win. Why? You know, again, I struggle with that comment in general, but if he's really going to be a leader on the team, he has to somehow try to, you know, pull that out of guys or really make things happen. And he didn't take a shot in the second half for quite a while. I think he took one early. He took a three, but then after that, I don't remember him even shooting the ball again. He didn't get to the line and whatever. So, you know, I would expect him to be, you know, some of that leader on the court from a point guard perspective. And I didn't really see that either. But I think it's easy for this team right now to let things snowball, and that's where, you know, timeout in the first half seemed to kind of work to at least break up the momentum. I thought they needed that in the second half, and I think you're going to continue to see that with this team. There are going to be a lot of teachable moments that I think if you don't take advantage of, it's going to be really easy for some of these games to get out of control.
I agree with you. I mean, you know, we've, for the most part, been pretty supportive of Coach Crean on the show. And I really thought he did a poor job last night, you know, and I hope that this turns out to be a teachable moment for him with this team. And again, like you said, maybe he knows the pulse of this team better than us. And this is, if Ryan were here, this is what he'd be telling us, you know, that Kareem knows this team better than we do. And so we have to trust him, and let's hope that's the case, you know, with the post-game comments and everything. But there were just objectively some moments last night that I think you look at it and you say, you know, like you did, where a timeout would have helped. It did in the first half. Why not in the second half? You know, and whatever. I mean, whatever happened last night, I mean, something happened to this team in the second half, and it just went in the tank. And so, you know, everybody's at fault. And that's, you know, that's the frustrating part about it. Let's talk about some individual players now. You know, I want to talk about Noah because I thought he was the one bright spot. We'll get to him in a little bit. But, you know, with Coach Green calling out the leadership of this team, you know, the leadership of this team is, you know, Yogi Ferrell and Will Sheehy. You know, Jeremy Hollowell is a sophomore as well, but I don't think anybody really looks at him as a leader. He's, you know, more of an X-factor type that has not really come through much this year. But the two guys are Yogi and Will. And Will is the senior. He's the guy who, you know, he's kind of the link to the past, the guy who's been here for the down times, has been through a lot of the battles. And I think last night really highlighted some issues and some concern now that I think people are starting to have with Will in terms of, is he ready for an increased role? You know, he's a guy who's been a sixth man, has really thrived in a role, coming off the bench, kind of being a garbage guy, you know, being a basket cutter when there's all this attention paid to Jordan Holes and Christian Watford and Victor Oladipo. He can find his seams and cut to the basket and find openings, and he's more of a focal point now. And that's, you know, against better teams, finding those seams is not quite as easy. And so, you know, we do have a question. Our buddy 3AM Burrito on Twitter says, Sheehy was kind of a loose cannon emotionally last year. This year he seems sedated. Do you think he is trying to rein it in too much? And I agree with that because, and again, I thought there were some stretches last night where his defense was terrific and there was great effort and there was intelligent defense. But especially in the second half when we could have used the bucket, you know, it almost looked like he was short-arming shots. There wasn't confidence. There wasn't swagger. It was, this was not the Will Sheehy from Purdue last year. This was, you know, Will Sheehy who looked uncomfortable. And that's kind of the one, that's the one thing Kareem said that, you know, some of the stuff we don't know about. That's the one thing that he said that to me did ring true a little bit, where he basically suggested, hey, you know, maybe Will Sheehy's not quite comfortable in his role yet. And whether he provides vocal leadership, he's not providing, you know, the leadership of score a basket when we need it, get a play when we need it, that kind of leadership that guys like Victor Oladipo produced last year. So, Andy, I want to get your thoughts on Will, you know, because you look at a game like last night, those are the type of games where you really need your leaders to step up and carry the young guys. And unfortunately, he wasn't quite up to the task last night. Do you think that is going to kind of be the narrative to carry us through the season? Would he be better served, you know, going back to being an energy guy off the bench? I mean, kind of hard for him to do that now as a senior with roles kind of established as they are. But thoughts on him from last night and how you start to project him forward now, seeing his performance against Syracuse and how you think that'll look going into the Big Ten season?
Yeah, definitely. I saw that question. I thought it was a good one. And I wrote something similar down today myself. Was just, you know, is he cut out for the role he's being asked to play is exactly what I wrote as I was typing out my thoughts. And I'm not sure that he is. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. And whether he's trying to rein it in on his own or being asked to, I mean, I think he needs to get back to the things that made him successful. And he was able to impact the game without scoring a bunch of points. And I don't know if he feels that extra offensive burden with everybody else, you know, from last year's team gone and so many young guys. But, you know, again, like I said before, he's not necessarily a, we need a big basket, I'm going to go give you the ball and isolate you on somebody or do whatever. He's a guy that plays really well off the ball and those kinds of things. And I don't think that's not going to change, I don't believe. And so I think, you know, maybe he is being a bit miscast or being asked to do, you know, more than he's capable of. That being said, I thought outside of the defense last night, because I thought he did a pretty good job on C.J. Fair, particularly in the first half, you know, he wasn't even doing those little things. I mean, he didn't get one rebound last night. And those are ways that those are ways that we were accustomed to him impacting the game, you know, grabbing offensive rebounds, making hustle plays, doing the little things, and that. And I think that somehow is almost getting lost somewhere, either in his, you know, desire to try to do more of other things. But he doesn't have to lead this team in scoring. I don't even think he has to be second on this team in scoring. You know, but if he could score 10 points a game in a way similar to what he did last year and bring the same kind of, you know, energy and rebounding and some vocal leadership on the court, I think that's fine. I don't think he has to, you know, being a leader doesn't mean that you're scoring 20 points a night. I think there's a lot of guys that we can all think of over the course of time at IU who have been able to establish themselves as leaders on a team without, you know, lighting up the scoreboard every night. And so whether that's pressure that Kareem is putting on him or he's putting on himself or maybe something else entirely, I really don't have any view into, but I do think, you know, he needs to get back to playing a little bit more like he played last year. And I think he could still do that while being in the starting lineup, because I don't think he's a guy that you can have come off the bench at this point. And I don't think he should, but I just think there needs to be a little bit more of that, you know, vocal leadership, me against the world mentality where he's, you know, yelling at crowds and becoming the focal point, because quite honestly, that might also help this team. You know, he becomes the guy that everybody in the building is hating. Maybe that loosens up some of the other guys who are struggling in some of these for environments. So I definitely would like to see him get back a little bit more to the way that he, you know, had played leading into this year. And I do struggle to understand why he hasn't really been able to do that consistently this year. But it is a pretty big change for him. I mean, he's out of his comfort zone just as much as anybody else in terms of, you know, the guys he's surrounded with and things like that. But I certainly think all the things you read from a, you know, game planning and basketball IQ and those kinds of things, he absolutely has the ability to be a leader on the floor in terms of those kinds of things. It may just be the scoring aspect of things that, you know, we need to change our expectations of a little bit.
Yeah. Another Twitter question that we had come in is from SW Tykes. And he asked, and we kind of covered this a little bit already, he asked, do you think Kareem was using the player's lack of effort to hide behind his poor coaching job last night? And so since we kind of covered that, Andy, let me preface it this way, because as I think back to last night and to the first half when we did play well, you know, obviously, you know, you think of Noah's contributions, you think of Yogi's threes. The other two guys that I think about are Troy Williams and Devin Davis. And again, you know, every single time Devin Davis goes out on the court, he does something that makes me say out loud, man, I love Devin Davis. I love his hustle, you know. And, you know, and Troy Williams, obviously he had the big, you know, SportsCenter highlight play, but I just thought he was really active there early on. And I was shocked, actually. I'm looking at the box score right now. Troy only played 23 minutes, and Devin Davis only played 7 in the entire game. You know, and so you think, okay, well, Devin Davis, you know, he's got, you know, Bobby Capobianco's, you know, propensity for fouling, right? Well, he only had 1 foul. Troy only had 3 fouls. You know, and so to me, you know, those guys really went out there and did some good things. You know, did Devin score? No. He was 0-for-3 from the field, and, you know, he had some shots blocked, whatever, but he was hustling. He got rebounds. I thought when we were really scrapping and staying in the game, he was a big part of it. You know, Troy, you know, had 6 points. Yes, he had the ill-advised threes. Take away the threes, though, and he was pretty efficient. You know, 3-for-6 from two-point range. He had a few rebounds. He had a couple steals, doing a good job on defense. You know, and those guys are, quote-unquote, rewarded with not a whole lot of playing time when I think, really, their performance is warranted more. So, you know, if we kind of look at that question, you know, is Kareem hiding behind poor coaching? Let's look at it, you know, within kind of the framework of those two guys. You know, and do you look at that, you know, just kind of in a, you know, in isolation as poor decisions by Kareem to not give those two guys more time, you know, whereas a guy like Evan Gordon plays 24 minutes off the bench and Stan Robinson plays 10 minutes off the bench, you know, and he did some things, but I didn't think he necessarily contributed more than Devin Davis. You know, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would agree. I did read somewhere after that Davis turned his ankle at some point in the game, and that was maybe a factor in that. But I did think the same thing. I mean, you know, in 7 minutes he grabbed 3 rebounds. That's pretty good, and that's pretty indicative of what he's been able to do so far. So I was definitely surprised by that. Same thing about Williams, particularly when I looked at that in the second half. I did think he made things happen. He fouled Cooney on one of the three-pointers, I think, early in the second half and took those threes. But overall, I mean, he's just trying to make things happen out there. I really thought both those guys played well in the first half when things were, you know, everything seemed to be happening by the rim with, you know, offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds and block shots and all those kinds of things. They seemed to not be afraid to mix it up in there, and I thought that was valuable. I mean, I'm definitely of the opinion I'd like to see, you know, one or both of those guys play 28, 30 minutes a night. And if we want to go with the let's work through it, then let them work through it, because I think they're guys who you can see being good multi-year players in the program who are going to develop and seem to have the desire to get better and play hard. And I'll take my chances against inexperienced guys playing really hard in a different way than rolling the dice with some of these other guys. I mean, I think they've proven that they're out there being active, making things happen both, you know, defensively and on the glass. And I think that's what this team needs. And maybe that effort becomes contagious, and maybe it becomes a, you know, lead by example type thing with those guys, and they raise the level of everybody else's play. But I definitely would have liked to see them play more. I thought Gordon, I didn't mind the minutes for him. 24, I guess, seemed like a lot, but I did think he was at least a steadying influence on things. Didn't really seem to get rattled. Didn't really have a lot of things on the stat sheet. You know, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, scored a basket, had a steal, but you know, didn't turn the ball over, which is, you know, more than you can say for some of the other guys. I didn't mind that. I did question the at one point in the second half, one of those lineups had all 3 guards out there, which wasn't a very good matchup. Robinson ends up getting matched up on CJ Fair and gets taken advantage of on the defensive end. I definitely thought some of those things just didn't make a lot of sense. And again, even a guy like Perea, I thought came in the first half, you know, played a couple minutes, had a couple rebounds, a block shot, made 2 quick fouls. So I think that's a factor, but he hardly played at all in the second half. He was another guy I would like to see, particularly with the guys that Syracuse had in there. They weren't really, you know, dumping it into guys in the low post that he would have been guarding. They were more getting, you know, rebounds and points on stick backs and things like that, where it felt like he could have helped with some of that, block some shots, because they did have some success blocking shots in the first half. That kind of went away in the second. I just think there's got to be a way to get this down to a, you know, 8-9-man rotation, so you got your 5 starters. I think you definitely want to play Davis quite a bit off the bench. You want to play Gordon. Almost at this the point of, you know, pick Perea or Fisher and let them be the, you know, the primary big guy coming off the bench. And while that's kind of unfortunate for the odd man out in that scenario, I think there's plenty of examples of guys at other programs, even at IU, who have not played big roles, learned a lot in practice and in the off season, and came in the next year ready to produce. I mean, even look at Syracuse, a guy like Trevor Cooney, he hasn't played hardly at all over his, you know, Syracuse career so far, but he, you know, kind of waited his time, played behind other guys, got in games when he could, and now he's a huge contributor for them. So the whole thing of I got to get everybody a few minutes doesn't really help. And at some point, to me, like I said last time, you got to figure out, you know, feels like 9 guys almost tops, that, you know, these are the guys who are going to play the bulk of the minutes, and there's some guys that I'm going to let out there for 28, 30, 32 minutes and let them figure it out. I'm all for that approach if we, you know, start to tighten up the rotation a little bit and really let guys try to work through it. So, yeah, I'm glad we kind of took that the other way. I think we talked about the other piece. I don't know that he's hiding behind anything. And he may not believe he made, you know, poor coaching decisions. It's really tough to say. But, yeah, certainly a few things I didn't agree with. But, you know, I just think a lot of things would be solved by letting some of these groups of guys play together a little bit more regularly. And really tighten up the rotation.
Look, when you lose by 17 on the road and are non-competitive for 20 minutes of basketball like Indiana was last night, there's plenty of blame around. There's blame on the coaches. There's blame on the players. You know, it's not one or the other. You know, the game plan wasn't perfect. The effort wasn't perfect. The execution wasn't perfect. There were a lot of problems. I will say this, though. You know, if we're talking about the rotation, the first guy who's going in the rotation – and the last guy who's getting blamed for last night is Noah Vonleh, who, you know, no, he didn't rise to the occasion against Connecticut, but, you know, if you watch that game, you realize there were some extenuating circumstances there, and he just kind of got taken out of that game. But, you know, in a tough matchup for him, I thought he played really well last night. And again, I'm shocked looking at the box score that he only played 27 minutes last night, you know, and he wasn't in extreme foul trouble. He only had 3 fouls. You know, he only was able to get 5 field goal attempts up, but he was 13 of 16 from the line. You know, he was able to get 6 boards. He had 3 blocks. But I'll tell you what I liked about Noah more than anything last night, and it's that he didn't back down from the physical play. I mean, you know, obviously he had that flagrant foul called on the elbow. You know, the ref had to stop and talk with he and DeJuan Coleman about, you know, how physical they were playing. But I loved seeing that. I loved seeing how physical he was. I loved seeing the effort. And I know this is kind of a, I don't know, it's one of those nebulous things to say, but he kind of had that look in his eye. And whereas in the Connecticut game, he looked a little shell-shocked to me, last night he looked intense, he looked focused, he looked in it the whole game. And so, you know, Yogi can say that some players didn't believe that they could win, and Tom Crean can say that. I'll tell you one guy who did believe he could win, and that's Noah Vonleh. And you could just tell watching him, his body language, how he was going about his business. Now, unfortunately, the rest of the offense around him wasn't functioning quite that well to get him a lot of good looks. And, you know, he did have 4 turnovers. It wasn't a perfect effort by any means, but I think when you look at, you know, outside of that 10-minute stretch in the first half, the other positive that I take from this is that, you know, Noah Vonleh has kind of put that UConn game behind him, and now in a big game, he stepped up and was really the leader out there on the floor for Indiana in terms of activity, production, and was able to have a pretty solid game. As you look at his game from last night, what did you think of Noah, Andy?
Yeah, I thought he did well. You know, looking down, he ended up with 16 free throws. I mean, he was one of the only guys that was scoring any points, really, during that stretch in the second half, because he was doing a nice job of getting to the line. And, you know, the 4 turnovers are, you know, not a great part of things. But I think, you know, that kind of comes with the territory against a tough defense where he's getting the ball right in the teeth of it more often than not. But I did think he played well. I think the only thing that concerns me is, he's got to be careful not to start getting a reputation of a guy who's really going to you want to be the reputation of a guy who's not afraid to mix it up inside. You don't want to get the reputation where they're looking at everything you're doing and trying to catch you, you know, throwing an elbow or doing something like that. But I think he definitely wasn't, in the way that the moment almost seemed too big for him before, that definitely didn't seem to be the case last night. So I think it's definitely a positive for him. I think it shows he's, you know, hopefully moved past that performance, like you said, and was able to still be successful when he, you know, things weren't necessarily going well. And Syracuse is a tough team to score inside on. And so, you know, he did some little things. I thought he really benefited when, you know, IU got out in transition coming back in the first half and was able to take advantage of some of those situations. But I thought he played hard, you know, pretty much throughout, and, you know, was one of the lone bright spots, really, for the team.
Why does he only play 27 minutes? I mean, do you have any – I mean, is there any kind of reasoning that you can give for that, or is this just kind of another, you know, kind of, you know, aspect of the substitution pattern last night that doesn't make sense? Because to me, I mean, that he should have played 35 minutes last night, but obviously he didn't.
Yeah, I kind of looked over what I charted for that one stretch there. And during that stretch, he really played – he only sat out for 2 stretches during there, and they were each about 2 minutes in duration in the second half. Now, he may have sat out more toward the end. Like I said, I kind of stopped looking at it when it got to be around 3 minutes. So maybe there was just more time in the first half that he missed than I realized. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think, you know, the one good thing that I saw when – I was looking at those, you know, substitutions and lineups and things like that, was that he was in the game for long stretches of time. And that's only going to help a guy like that. I think it's going to help more to have other guys around him who are, you know, used to being on the floor with him and learning his tendencies and where he likes the ball and ways that they could be effective last night. But I did feel like, you know, maybe in contrast to some other guys where, you know, he was able to play for long stretches and really get a good feel for the game. So, I was surprised to see that as well, because in large part because I had looked at the second half where he really didn't sit out very much. So I would assume more of that was in the first half, and I really don't remember when he got the different fouls. So not sure if it was a scenario where, you know, did he get 2 fouls and sit out. I honestly don't remember that. But, I think, you know, some of these guys who you're really going to rely on to be the foundation, I know – you don't want to run them into the ground as freshmen and things like that. But certainly in these bigger, you know, let them rest against Kennesaw State, But in games like that, the one last night, I definitely wouldn't mind seeing him play 33, 35 minutes.
Okay, let's deal with this next topic really quick. I don't think it'll take long. Austin Etherington's ejection. I thought it was ridiculous. I mean, it was a hard foul, but I didn't see anything flagrant about it. Do you agree or disagree?
I thought it was probably worthy of a flagrant one just because of his hand in the back. But he also wasn't, to me, a flagrant two is where you're deliberately trying to hurt somebody. And I definitely didn't think it was that, particularly because he got the ball. I mean, he's a guy who's, been injured, in a game, obviously not the result of a foul or anything like that. But, it certainly doesn't strike me as a guy who's trying to hurt somebody and was trying to make a play on the ball. But I think the hand in the back probably, to me, makes that a flagrant one. But I thought a flagrant two was pretty excessive.
Yeah, not to mention, you can see him pull his hand back. I mean, he didn't follow through. I mean, he did put his hand on the guy's back, but it was the natural motion of him trying to get the ball. Anyway, and, even Jim Boeheim said he didn't think it was bad. So just wanted to get that out there. Last individual that I want to talk with before we start to wrap this up, we have to get to him, is Jeremy Hollowell. Unfortunately, Jeremy Hollowell last night played the second most minutes on the team, more than Noah Vonleh, more than Troy Williams. And both are guys that, as I just look back on the game, had much more impact than Hollowell. The guys who scored more points, Jeremy did have 5 rebounds. So I guess there's a few things that he did, but, he was 1 of 4 from the field. And really, as I watched him play last night, he just kind of looked like a ball mover to me. I mean, the ball got to him, and most of the time he was taking – 1 or 2 non-aggressive dribbles, non-threatening dribbles, and just passing it, and I suppose to a certain extent that's maybe better than him just dribbling in and getting a charge or turning the ball over. But he's the kind of guy that we know has scoring ability and that we're kind of counting on to be, that scorer, be a dynamic aspect of the offense, a guy who can create mismatch problems, that has, a multiple skill set in a half-court offense that can help us. And we didn't see any of that last night. I thought for the most part he was a non-factor, and to have a guy like that out there with his talent level playing for 30 minutes and really not doing anything, you're not going to beat top 10 teams on the road doing that. And I just, I think we were all hopeful after his last game coming off the bench for League playing was that was going to be a to come. I didn't really see it last night. What'd you think of him? And, as you kind of project him forward, what are you looking at, for him to do now in these next few games?
Yeah, he's a tough one to figure out. And the hard part with him for me is he's clearly a guy that has talent and can really be a good contributor for the team. The problem is that we're getting into this pattern of where he's just out there for long stretches of time and he's really not providing any tangible value. So again, it kind of goes back to the how much do you let him work through it, and versus a game ago trying to send a message by not starting him, he kind of gets the message for that game. And quite honestly, as we talked about last time, maybe that's the better role for him, is to come off the bench and do some of those kinds of things. I really don't know, but I find it hard to continue playing him at the expense of not playing some of the other guys that we've talked about. And that's where it starts to become difficult for Kareem to try to figure out what to do, because, he absolutely can be a contributor. And if this team's really going to be good, he's going to need to be a big part of that. That being said, you're just not seeing enough from him on the floor to really warrant him playing 30 minutes a game. And so that's the part that I'm kind of struggling with at this point. And I think last night he, was either non-aggressive. There was no middle ground. It was either, like you said, it was kind of a, I'm just out here moving the ball, or he would get out and try to, drive in the middle of a bunch of people and make turnovers. There wasn't really a medium speed for him where he was really able to impact the game. And quite honestly, if he's not able to do that, I didn't think he was doing a tremendous job defensively or anything like that. I just, I think it's a tough spot for Kareem to try to figure out what exactly to do with him at this point, because I think he's also a guy, as we said, that seems like, there's some, fragility or whatever you want to call it there, where I think he's worried about shaking his confidence But quite honestly, he seemed to respond well coming off the bench. And so maybe something like that doesn't, you know, shake him in the way that we feared it might. And that's something that needs to happen going forward. But I struggle to justify giving him minutes over a guy like Williams or Devin Davis or even Evan Gordon to some extent as you look down some of those kinds of things.
Okay, so before we get to final thoughts, one more question kind of looking ahead. You know, Indiana has three games against the likes of Northern Florida and Oakland and Nicholls State, a game on neutral floor against Notre Dame in there. That'll be an interesting contest and perhaps more of a measuring stick game than we anticipate it being. Then Indiana starts off the Big Ten season at Illinois, which is a place that we've struggled a lot recently, even when it seems like we have a game in hand like last year, can snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Then home against Michigan State, at Penn State, and home against Wisconsin, which we know the kind of horrors that they've brought. That's a little bit of a daunting start to the Big Ten season, especially in light of the way the team played last night. So, Andy, as you look forward to this team getting into Big Ten play, over these next four games, you know, which should be three games where you look at KenPom and we have, you know, 95, 96, 99% chance of winning in that Notre Dame game. Not sure what that'll be, but I'm sure we'll be favored in that game. What do you want to see from this team now over these next four games to give you some confidence that we can get off to a decent start and build some confidence against, you know, with the Big Ten schedule, those first four games? I mean, that's not an easy stretch of four games there to start out. And with a young team, you know, I think it's going to be important to get off to a good start. What do you want to see over these next four games?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'd really like to see the rotation tighten up, as we said. I don't think you're going to learn a great deal about what this team can or can't do on the basketball court over these games, other than I think it would obviously be good to see them come out and really take care of business early against some of these teams that they've overmatched and or where they should be overmatched and really, you know, jump out to early leads and not let them hang around. I think that would obviously be a good sign. I think the Notre Dame game becomes a pretty big one from a NCAA tournament resume standpoint. Notre Dame isn't a world beater by any means, but it is a, you know, a tournament caliber team, and it would, you know, be by far the best win of the non-conference if they get that. So I really think they need to go undefeated in these games, really go into the Big Ten with some confidence. But for me, I really struggle to figure out what we're going to learn from this other than if we see some, you know, more demonstrative shows of leadership from players on the floor or some changes in the way that guys are being rotated in and out and trying to develop some, you know, more cohesive units out there where these guys are able to, you know, play together for longer stretches and develop a little bit of continuity and familiarity with one another. But other than that, I think it's going to be pretty tough to get a great gauge for, you know, what kind of impact this Syracuse game had going forward in those games, because if the Syracuse game never happened, I would absolutely expect IU to wipe the floor with most of the teams that are left on the non-conference schedule.
Okay, well, Andy, while you were talking, we just got a call in here on the assembly call line. It is an 858 number, which is Ryan Phillips's area code. So I'm going to put this number online, and we're going to see if it's Ryan. Ryan, is that you?
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
Oh, you know.
No, go ahead.
Just about the worst travel ever, but you know what? That's a whole other issue. Hey, after the disaster that was today, IU's performance against Syracuse looks fantastic.
Yeah, I guess it's all relative, right? You have a little bit better perspective now?
Just a bit. I just spent an hour and a half on a bus from Chicago to Milwaukee, and when you're doing that, you really reexamine your life. Just with the people around you, and yeah, that was not fun. But
yeah,
enough about me. How about those Hoosiers, huh?
How about those Hoosiers? You know, we spent the last hour kind of breaking some things down, talking about some questionable decisions by Coach Crean, and we did throw your general opinion there about letting guys play through. And this is what I want to get your thoughts on. I don't know how much time you have. We've already been going for an hour, so we won't go too much longer, but here's what I want to get your thoughts on. We've talked about Will Sheehy ad nauseum. I don't think you really want to mention him anymore. We don't want to get your blood boiling any more than it is. So let's stick with this, because it's something you and Andy talked about. You know, Coach Crean last night, a lot of people have been criticizing the substitution patterns and his unwillingness to take timeouts. And I know you've in the past, Ryan, been in favor of not taking timeouts because you let guys work things out on the floor. But as Andy pointed out, you know, substituting almost every couple minutes where you're not allowing one set of guys to play out there and build continuity together, you know, aren't you kind of defeating the purpose then of not calling the timeout out? How do you reconcile those two kind of almost disparate strategies that, you know, whatever you think about them, they didn't work last night, but how do you kind of reconcile those together? I mean, is this a case of where there just wasn't really an overall strategy, or is there some bigger plan at work here that we're just not seeing?
I have to believe there's a plan because I don't think Crean is the kind of guy, just knowing his personality, that would just go into a game without a plan and just throw him out there and say, let's see what happens. It's a solid point that, yeah, he was subbing guys in but not really stopping play and stuff and addressing things. You also have to remember, and I mentioned this to Andy last night, you know, it's not like there were no timeouts in the game. You have media timeouts as well. So you have to kind of figure out when to take your timeouts, when to make your substitutions and things like that. I think this team is so new, and I think everybody knew going into this game that they were going to lose. I mean, that Syracuse team is better than the one that beat us in the Final Four last year. They may not have as much high-end talent with Sutherland and Michael Carter-Williams out, but they're veteran, they know what they're doing, and they put the hammer down on a really young team in the second half. I think the play in the first half, I was actually shocked how well IU played. So I think that at times you do have to balance letting guys work it out and not having daddy come in and have to fix everything for them. You have to let them, because there are going to be times you don't have timeouts or you don't have enough and you have to figure it out yourself. And so I think in a lot of these early games, Crean is trying to figure out where this team is, what they can do, and how to build them up towards the end of the season. Now, if this were the middle of the Big Ten season in a big game and he didn't call timeouts, I would have had a problem with it. If it was in March or in the Big Ten tournament, I would have had a problem with it. But this early in the season with this young team, I think he's trying to, you know, maybe see if a leader emerges. Maybe someone takes over, you know, a Troy Williams or a Von Lee steps up and demands the ball and gets something done. That didn't happen last night. I mean, I thought Von Lee was okay, but he got all of his points at the free throw line virtually. And aside from a huge dunk, Troy Williams didn't do a whole lot. So it was maybe something that, yeah, maybe it was a strategy and it backfired. But at the same time, this is such a young team. You have to have a plan for letting them figure it out and not just call a timeout, sub them out as soon as they're bad kind of thing. You've got to kind of let them figure it out. And I think the outcome last night shouldn't have been shocking to anybody if you look at the final score. But maybe the way it happened where they were playing with them and then just disappeared in the second half, yeah, that's a little shocking. But at the end of the day, if they had lost by 16 and played the same way throughout the game, I don't think anybody would be as shocked as they are at what happened.
Andy, do you have any rebuttals to Ryan's statements?
I don't think we can assume with Crean that we'll ever run into a time when we won't have timeouts left at the end of the game. So I would dispute that part of Ryan's comment. But other than that,
that's fair. Fair assessment, my friend. Fair assessment.
No, other than that, I mean, I talked enough about it before. It's probably not worth it. I just couldn't help myself with that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andy, for Barrett Rockers, we're going to get to those. Ryan, before we do get to final thoughts, were there any individual performances that you wanted to call out and discuss? I mean, we've pretty much talked about everybody, especially the starters and a few of the backups. But was there anybody whose individual performance stood out for you positively or negatively?
You know, I thought Yogi was good in the first half. I frankly thought the ball movement was fantastic at times in the first half, like better than it was last year against the Syracuse zone. I mean, far better. But I thought that, yeah, the second half was just we struggled in half court, and against a team like Syracuse, you can't struggle in the half court. But unfortunately, young teams do struggle to score in a half court game, and we're going to have that this year at times. That shouldn't be a surprise. I thought Yogi looked good at times. I thought Von Lee looked strong going against veteran guys. Wasn't necessarily a phenomenal performance, but I thought that, you know, he didn't wilt like we saw someone like Cody do from time to time against that kind of opponent. But I think there were more disappointing performances than noteworthy ones. And so that was pretty much you know, what I took away from the game. But, again, I thought first half in stretches, they looked like a phenomenal team. They looked like they were on fire moving the ball, you know, especially considering how poorly they shot to start the game. And then it just kind of – they came out for the second half, and it was like they'd never seen a basketball before.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so let's stop right there. Let me ask you that then, because there's a question I asked Andy, because that's the part that doesn't make sense to me. Because I entered this game with very little hope, you know, and the way that we played for that stretch in the second half where we ended up taking the lead, I had a lot of hope, and I thought, okay, you know, you hear, you know, Kareen and Yogi talking after the game about guys who didn't believe that we could win, but to me, that's something that would have manifested itself when we were down 10-0. I mean, those guys really looked like they believed when they were fighting and rebounding, and, you know, we weren't shooting well, but we were scrapping, and we were playing good defense, and, you know, we did make a couple threes. I mean, you know, you go into halftime down 4, there's some momentum there. You know, at least I felt it, and you think the team does. So how do you account for then the difference in how this team came out in the first half? It's like there were new players inhabiting the crimson uniforms as opposed to the ones that were out there in the first half. Do you just chalk that up to the emotional whims of a young team, or is there anything else that you saw that, you know, kind of suggests what caused the change?
Well, Kareen has said this before about games, and I know it infuriates people, but you've got to make shots. I mean, they had open looks to start that second half and missed a bunch in a row, and that just deflated them. I mean, you could tell. Confidence is a very big thing with a young team, and their confidence in the first – and not only were they missing shots, but Syracuse was attacking them on the other end. And you know, that's like a gut punch. When you miss a bad shot or, you know, just any shot, if you miss a shot you should probably make, and then the other team comes right back down and scores easily, and you're having to work hard to get your shots and they're not, that's like being punched in the face. And I get why people thought maybe they should have taken a timeout there, stem the tide, set up a play, get a bucket. But at the same time, you know, I think that was eventually going to happen as well. But, yeah, these emotional highs and lows are going to happen all season. I don't know if you'll ever see it as wildly as it was with, what was it, like 2 minutes left in the first half where we took a lead and the first 5 minutes of the second half. I don't know if we'll ever see it swing that widely in a game again, but it's going to happen. I mean, you're going to have stretches of time where this team completely disappears just because of youth. I mean, that is what having all these freshmen does. Freshmen and sophomores who haven't played before. I mean, people, I constantly harp on this. We lost 4 1,000-point scorers, and, you know, I think it was 3 guys, or maybe even 4 guys who shot over 40% from 3. I mean, that's irreplaceable immediately. It just is. And so this team's going to struggle at times, and it's hard as a fan to see that after the highs of last year, but that's, you've got to keep your, you know, you've got to remember patience with this team because it's so young.
Now, good point. All right, let's go to final thoughts, fellas. Andy first, then Ryan, and then I'll close it out.
All right, so I've got a few quick things here. So one, to kind of wrap up thoughts on Kareen, I tweeted this out last night. So I live in Cincinnati, and there's a lot of conversation about Andy Dalton here from a football standpoint, and you have people who are kind of on both sides of the argument, and the way that he ends up playing is, if you think he's good, he does just enough and makes just enough plays to make you kind of reaffirm that belief. And if you don't, he makes just enough bad plays to make you reaffirm that belief as well. And I think, you know, Jared, one thing you brought up early on is a ton of the comments out there about Kareen. We spent a lot of time talking about it tonight. I think he's, like, getting into that same territory where if you like him, it's easy to point to a lot of things. There's a lot of things that he's done really well, players he's developed, recruiting, you know, Big Ten championship last year, all those things. So people who are supporters of him or are, you know, very much pro-Kareen, I think any IU fan is a supporter of him, or at least I would hope so. And for those who aren't so sure about what he does in-game and whatever, there's enough things that happen over the course of the game where you can kind of question that as well. And I certainly hope that I feel like that's becoming a thing now when this team loses big games, and I think that overshadows things that are probably more important. But I don't know that that's going to go away this year, especially with the team that's going to be up and down and probably going to open itself up for that. So I think that's something for us to not necessarily talk anymore about tonight, but kind of watch as the season goes on, because I definitely feel like it's a thing at this point. Other than that, I mean, I kind of go back to, you know, when I sat down at the beginning of the year, laid out what I thought the record was going to be, the team's right where I thought they were going to be. at this point. I figured they'd lose to UConn, and I figured they'd lose to Syracuse. So in that regard, for as disappointing as the way the second half of last night's game played out, the team's kind of right where we thought they would be. Now, I'm not sure that they got there in the way that we might have expected, and that's, I think, what leads to some of the frustration or questions. But I think that's, if you're trying to look for positives, that's probably one of them. And, the other thing is we've seen some of these flashes from guys. And for me, going forward, what I want to see is I want to see more Troy Williams. I want to see more Devin Davis. I want to see more of these guys playing together as a unit and trying to work through things together. I have absolutely no problem with the, you guys need to suck it up and figure this out there, so long as they're allowed to do that together and develop things that the team last year developed. I mean, they got their brains beat in for a couple years, but by the time they got around to last year, they knew exactly where each other was going to be, and they had a lot of things going for them in tight games that they could fall back on. If this is the year that this team needs to develop that, I'm all for it. I think it's on Crean to allow that to happen, which I don't think, we did a great job of last night. But in the end, I think there's enough things to, still be positive about. We talked about this was going to be a roller coaster, and last night was a roller coaster within a roller coaster of a game. So I think so far we've been spot on about that, and the highs and lows will be there, and certainly should be some confidence builders at least coming up here, even if they don't teach us a whole lot about how the team's going to react.
Okay, and Ryan, your final thought that doesn't have to do with your missing luggage.
Don't ever take a plane in December anywhere. Stay home. I guess my final thought, basketball-related final thought, is, again, just the preaching patience. I mean, this is such a talented team, and we see that in stretches. I mean, they have as much pure talent as anybody this side of Kentucky. It's also the kind of talent that needs to be developed. There's some raw guys on the team who are getting better and show flashes, but, this isn't last year's team, and it was never going to be. And Andy's right. They're right where we thought they'd be. The Big Ten's a tough conference this year, but there's no reason they can't compete. I'm not saying they'll win it, or they're my pick to win it, but at least I think they can be competitive in it. And each month, I think they will be better than the last month. So you're going to have a team that's improving. And, if you look at it game to game, it may not look like it, because they certainly looked worse tonight than they did in their last game, or last night than they did in their last game. But if you look at it from a month to month or a few weeks, 3-week periods or something like that, you'll see a better team slowly moving forward, and a team with a better idea of what its identity is and what it needs to do moving forward. So, don't jump off the plane yet. We'll be fine, and it's just going to take some time.
Yeah, you guys both bring up good points, and the season's going to be a roller coaster, and shoot, the last 24 hours has been a roller coaster. I mean, we played so much better in the first half than I thought, and the second half was so much worse than I thought, and then, you spend the day reading some of the comments, and so many people are, as Ryan said, ready to jump off the plane, but this is part of the reason why I'm glad that we do this show, because I think it's good to talk things out, because, you almost always realize that, it's a cliche, but things, usually aren't quite as good as it seems when you win, and they're not quite as bad as it seems when you lose. And when you take the long-term view of this team, this is about where we thought we'd be. And this loss was a little bit, it was disappointing. I think maybe, we got our hopes up after really playing well against Connecticut and some of the performances. And, and last night didn't quite do that. But this is a very talented team, and there are some things to kind of hang your hat on and to be encouraged about. I think it's important to see, how this team comes out, these next four games, and especially that Notre Dame game and how they play, because the Big Ten season is not going to start off easy. It starts out tough. So we've got to be ready, to play there and get off to a good start, because I think it's going to be important for this young team. Ryan said, sometimes you have to shoot well, and sometimes you have to win games, and sometimes you have to win a game or two against a good team to believe that you can. And so that opportunity is going to come early and often in the Big Ten season. So I think we need to have a good head of steam, some good momentum going into that. And so, while it may not be that exciting to see these teams like North Florida and Oakland and Nicholls State, on the schedule, there's important things to watch. I think the attitude of the team, the energy level, like Andy said, do you take care of business early? We don't want to have repeats of the LIU game, you know, where it comes down to the wire. These need to be games where we really play well. And then obviously that Notre Dame game, I think, is an important measuring stick, because right now it's about what Indiana is, you know, a kind of a borderline NCAA team. And so against a team that's similar to us, let's see how we do. But, you know, good points, Ryan, in terms of staying positive. I think it's hard for a lot of folks to do that after last night. But let's remember, this is the number four team in their place, and it's a team that, you know, beat us, one of the best teams in recent memory, beat us almost as bad last year. And so, you know, take some positives from how the team played in the first half. Be disappointed about the second half, but let's keep our heads up and hope that the guys come out, play well in these next four games, and get ready to go for the Big Ten season. That's it for tonight, everybody. We thank everybody who has listened. We will be here. That game is on Saturday, December 7th, against North Florida. It starts at 7:30 Eastern time, so we'll be here after that with another episode of the Assembly Call. Make sure you go subscribe to the email newsletter there on the website. Follow us at Assembly Call. We will be tweeting during the game and all throughout the week. And other than that, everybody, keep your heads up, stay positive, and we will talk to you Saturday after the game. Have a great night, everybody.